Hello, welcome to another episode, a pandemorific episode of Sour Graps. I'm your host, Alex Pulaski. Everything sucks. Yeah, man. No end in sight to the, outbreak. Mostly because there's a whole lot of people who just can't get it through their thick skulls that they should probably stay inside. Because it would help with the not getting everybody sick at once. But, you know, I like to think of this whole social distancing period as like a trial run, a test to see if we can all, as a society, follow directions in the eventuality of the, you know, inevitable zombie virus that sweeps over the planet. Can we follow directions and make sure that something that's much, much worse than this, which is still really bad, can we follow directions? No, we can't. As a society, we're failing that miserably. So let's talk about SmackDown. And then we'll talk about how they're going to tape WrestleMania and why that's a very, very good thing. Hey, it's Gronk. Now, if you don't know who Gronk is, and really, I don't even know if Gronk even knows himself, but if you don't know who Gronk is, the Gronkmeister, Gronkenstein, Gronky Kong, if you don't know this adorable man-child, he played for a very good American football team. He's an idiot. He's a moron. But that made him, like, he didn't know he was supposed to be tackled. Like, that was mostly what I gleaned from watching him. Like, hey, there's three guys on my back. I should probably keep running. No, you shouldn't, because then you're gonna tweak something. He's been injured a lot in the last few years of his career, but he's still relatively young. Anyway, his big claim to fame is he's a moron. He's an idiot. He's Gronk, or Grunk, I believe, since he decided some of his merch has an umlaut, the two little dots over the O, which his name wouldn't be Gronk anymore. It'd be like Grunk. Grunk. Gronky Kong, Gronkenstein. I don't know why you put the umlaut there. It changes the pronunciation. I don't know. Just something for the German fans, I guess. Anyway, yeah. So he's a party animal. That's his deal. Like, that's his whole aesthetic. So he comes out to terrible EDM music, dancing terribly. Wow. Yeah, dancing terribly. Yeah. Wow. I'm watching a GIF of it right now. He's bad at dancing. A man who's that bad at dancing can only be bad at sex. I'm going to say it. And I'm sure that no shortage of willing partners. I think the main thing is he liked to cook breakfast in the nude while women would be on a slip and slide in his own house. I remember reading about that. I never saw the film of it. Anyway, yeah, he came to the ring, but Mojo was there to help Michael Cole introduce him. By the way, I believe my washing machine might be developing a mind of its own and trying to escape my house. My daughter peed in my bed, so I'm washing those sheets and the... Too much information, I know. So I'm washing that, and I guess that's all kind of... You hear that? Bomb, bomb, bomb. I really apologize. It's very unprofessional. I'll try and move past that. It's in the spin cycle now. It's going to be over in a second. I hope. Anyway, yeah, so Gronk comes out, and he's there, and Mojo gets hyped, and Michael Cole doesn't get hyped, and Gronk is hyped and crazy and stupid. And he's interrupted almost immediately by King Corbin. I know you can hear that. You must be able to hear it. My mic isn't that good that it only picks up my voice. If it is, fantastic. I'm just going to keep talking to it because it's making me insane. Anyway, he King Corbin lectured Gronk about the NFL, which is funny since King Corbin, I think, was on a practice squad once, and Gronk is a multi-time Super Bowl champion. I think he's multi-time. He went to the Super Bowl many times. Pro Bowler, considered to be the greatest tight end in the history of the NFL. Anyway, he's lectured by King Corbin that the NFL is different. I was in the NFL, I know, and I'm an awesome WWE. Like, this is what I wanted, because if there's anybody who would do this and would make it make sense, it's Gronk looking at Corbin wearing that horrible king costume and be like, dude, why are you dressed like that? Why are you dressed like an extra from Game of Thrones? Why? I wanted Gronk to say that, but he didn't. King Corbin says, and again, Mojo's there. Former 24/7 champion Mojo is there backing up his buddy Gronk. He's just his hype man. He's like, ah ha ha, you Gronk, you're so funny. And Gronk's not funny. But Corbin says, you should need to get down on your knees and genuflect before your king. And Gronk's like, nah, we don't get on our knees. Which I wanted him to say of that, no homo, because he's definitely the kind of guy who uses the phrase no homo. It was a weird way he said, we don't get on our knees. Like, oh, no, it's not. I mean, have you ever watched a movie, Gronk, where the people bow before the king? That's what he's talking about. It's not a gay thing. It's okay. Anyway, Elias then interrupted and tried to sing a song about Corbin. And he and Gronk got nose to nose, and Gronk took off his jacket, and they're out there. And Mojo went around the back and like got on all fours, and then Gronk pushed Corbin, so he fell over Mojo. And then Corbin was like, nah, yo, foiled again. Oh, jeez, your popular bullies got me with their insidious guy makes a table, and then another guy pushes me over it. Womp, womp. And then Gronk made a match because Gronk can make matches now. Is Gronk the GM of SmackDown? No, Paige is. We'll talk about that in a second. But Gronk made a match between Corbin and Elias for WrestleMania. Listen, I hated this feud like with the fire of a thousand suns. I hate the Corbin and Roman feud. I hated it. I hated it. I hated it. But that dude, Corbin, he went out there and did everything they asked of him for months with a top guy in the company. And what does he get out of it for Mania season? A meaningless match with Elias that nobody cares about. Like, he's a good soldier for this fucking company. But okay, whatever. Gronk thinks that we all want to see an Elias versus Corbin match, which is nothing if not a signal that this poor guy's got terrible CTE. So Daniel Bryan and Drew Gulak are friends now because they both do technical wrestling and like technical wrestling. So they're best friends now when they just had a match and didn't like each other much. But honestly, that's a really good reason for two guys to become friends in WWE. That makes sense. Anyway, they teamed up against Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura with Sami Zayn on commentary. And, you know, I honestly can't remember if Michael Cole had Corey Graves with him at all. Oh, thank God. I don't know if you hear that. Silence. The laundry's done. Again, I apologize. I didn't realize it was going to be that loud. It's usually not that loud, but it was tonight. I'm sorry, again. So Sami Zayn's there on commentary with Michael Cole. I don't know if Corey Graves was with him or not. I honestly don't know. I didn't recognize it. I tried to block it out. But Sami Zayn's very good on commentary for this match with Bryan and Gulak. Bryan and Gulak basically cheat to win, and Sami Zayn calls it out, and they're like, good, it's good that they cheated because Michael Cole says, because you know they deserved it. I'm like, ah, come on, guys. You don't have to do that. You don't have to be that obvious about your biases. They call it now the Artists Collective, is Sami Zayn and Cesaro Nakamura. So after the match, Brian, there's a roll up. There's a lot of roll ups in this feud. A lot of roll ups, fun roll ups, not fruit roll ups. Those are the best roll ups, but roll ups nonetheless. Brian challenged Sami Zayn because they had a little beef backstage, and Brian challenged him to an Intercontinental title match at WrestleMania, such as it will be. And Zayn said, no, fine, you can have that as long as Gulak beats Nakamura next week. Now, under normal circumstances, if you told me the Intercontinental title feud for WrestleMania was going to come down to Sami Zayn versus Daniel Bryan, but only if Daniel Bryan's friend Drew Gulak can beat Sami Zayn's friend Shinsuke Nakamura, like, I'm all in. I would totally be super into that development. That'd be a lot of fun. Like, let's figure out how we're going to get Gronk, you know, Gronk, gosh, it's on my brain, Gulak to beat Nakamura. Let's figure out that match. That'll be a lot of fun because obviously it has to happen that way. And then Zayn versus Bryan could be a hell of a lot of fun. Yeah. Except it's going to be for no fans. Like the qualifying match for no fans and then Mania match pre-taped. Actually, I think pretty much SmackDown's going to be taped too. They're being really smart and they're taping everything starting next week. So the Raw and SmackDown is all going to be taped. So that's good. But yeah, this is going to be so weird because also I have no confidence in them because, again, as it was on Monday and as it was the last Friday, they're just doing the show they would normally do, except there's nobody there and it's a much smaller arena. Like, they're doing big light shows. People come out with wacky entrances and there's not pyro, but like steam. And that's as pyro-y as they can get in the PC. And it's weird. Like, people are, at least they're given their promos to, not to an audience, but to a camera, kind of. I mean, I don't know. I really hope these taped shows allow them to do something a little different than what they've been doing, because what they've been doing is really, really awkward. Hey, so Paige called in to talk. Michael Cole's standing in the ring for some reason to talk to Paige, who's calling in via Skype from Los Angeles. And then Bailey and Sasha come in, and Paige is like, well, I'm glad you're running your mouth because they let me make a match because I used to be general manager, and I guess that's how things work now. So they made fun of her because her career is over, which was kind of mean, and I understand that Paige isn't like that. So she announced that Bailey is going to have to face Lacey Evans at WrestleMania, but also Dana Brooke. And also, like, here's the best part. Like, Dana Brooke, what's okay, fine. How about Tamina? Does she even work here anymore? And Paige is like, sure, Tamina too. And also Naomi. And then also Sasha Banks. Because Sasha's like, how dare you make my friend wrestle all those women? You shouldn't do that. You blah, blah, blah. Well, how about this? You're also in the two. And then Sasha's like, well, actually, that's a really good idea to me. Why does Tamina get a WrestleMania match? Charlotte won the Royal Rumble, right? So she gets a shot at any title she chooses. She chose Rhea Ripley after Rhea Ripley kind of goaded her into it. Shayna Baszler won the Elimination Chamber match. So she gets a title shot at Becky Lynch. That makes sense. Why does Tamina get one? Why does Dana Brooke get one? Why do these women get a title? Why are they even sniffing a title match? Also, in this six-pack challenge, I do not see Carmella in it. Carmella, No Carmella, no Sonya Deville. I guess Sonya Deville's too busy kind of being tangentially related to the Otis and Mandy storyline. She can't get in this either. Bliss and Cross are going to be doing something with the Kabuki Warriors, it looks like. But Tamina and Dana Brooke, are you serious? What have they done to possibly... I was pissed that Sarah Logan got in the match to possibly get a title match at WrestleMania. Here you go. Dana Brooke and Tamina. Tamina, who's never won since she's been drafted to SmackDown and last won a TV singles match over a year ago. Tamina. Tamina. Okay, great. But yeah, so Sasha looks like she would definitely murder Bayley if she could be women's champion again. So that's a good little twist. Interesting. They showed the entire match of Bray Wyatt versus John Cena from WrestleMania 30. Now, hey, context is good. I think they should do stuff like this. Maybe not on the show, but if you're going to do like, here's these people have history going back several years. Let's reference it in our promos, but also not here's the whole match. If they were doing it regularly where, you know, it actually can fill 2 hours of a broadcast time, but, here's the match on YouTube in its entirety. We're going to direct you there via social media and everything. So everybody can go and see this thing because it's important that you know the context. Now, the context, of course, in 2014 is that Cena wins LOL. That's it. That's how it works. He's Super Cena. The fans in New Orleans were super behind Bray. They knew that at that point he was 26. He had so much creativity, and he was so interesting to watch. I mean, the spooky stuff hadn't worn off on us yet. We were still kind of into it. And the storyline they were telling... Like, can they make Cena into a monster? Like, we were all still waiting at that point for the Cena heel turn. This would be a perfect time for him to, like, just go off, like, prove Bray right. Not align with Bray, but, like show that there's something dark dwelling within John Cena that he himself cannot control. That's interesting. You know what's not interesting? Attitude adjustment, 1, 2, 3, LOL, Cena wins. Like, Cena, he puts... Bray down with his little terrible blue thunder bomb in position for the five knuckle shuffle, which I still can't believe they called it that. And you know, he throws his hand up and the crowd starts to cheer and they're booing him. They don't want to see John win this match because they know 2014 New Orleans Mania crowd knows this kid, Bray Wyatt, is super talented and really has something going here. And it'd be a shame if he got fed to Cena for no other reason than Cena always wins. Because it could possibly do irreparable harm to his burgeoning career. And guess what? They were right. I mean, I suppose they could have not had Undertaker lose to Lesnar at 30 and then redeemed Bray entirely by having Bray be the one who broke the streak at 31. But once Bray had already had no momentum going into that, really, and they had already had Taker lose at 30, they weren't going to have him lose back-to-back Mania matches. So, yeah, it's just Cena wins, LOL, and Bray kind of fell apart, and it's good to show us this. And honestly, that promo from last week, Bray being like obviously psychically damaged and giggling to himself in this weird high-pitched voice compared to the cult leader from 6 years ago, like it's a really interesting way that this you can sell this. I mean, Bray, it's got to be inarguable at this point that Bray is one of the greatest character actors in WWE history. Like he can pull off an incredible range. I mean, obviously they're in his own spectrum. Like you're not going to ask him to be white meat babyface, but within the spectrum of creepy, like he's got 17 different things he can do. Like it's pretty interesting that they could do that. And also pretty interesting that they could never really figure out a way to capitalize on it. especially this run with the Fiend, where they just never quite figured out how to not fuck it up. So, by the way, fully expecting Cena to beat Bray, because Cena wins LOL. Even though Cena doesn't even work here anymore, and a loss versus Bray Wyatt isn't going to hurt the box office of Fast 9 when it finally releases next year. But a loss to Cena by Bray Wyatt would certainly damage us ever taking him seriously ever again. Like, if he went in, he lost to Goldberg in 4 moves in Saudi Arabia and then challenged John Cena to a match at Mania because he felt he needed to do it to, like, get revenge or redemption for what happened to him 6 years ago, and then he loses that match to Cena anyway? Yeah. No, there's no way even I, a giant Bray Wyatt fan, could ever take him seriously ever again. And there are a lot of people who are just waiting for Bray to fall on his face again, so that'll be a good decision when they make it. Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross are interviewed backstage, and they're very pissed that Asuka intervened in their match last week. Bliss challenged Asuka to a match next week. I'm guessing they're going to add some kind of stipulation to it. So if Alexa wins, then she and Nikki get a shot at the tag titles at Mania, probably. Anyway, Alexa seemed miffed at Asuka. They did show that awesome footage of Asuka dancing on the ramp. Ooh, fun. I really can't believe this is all we're going to get. Before the match, Miz and John Morrison came out to do the dirt sheet. They're brilliant. This is how you do an empty arena SmackDown. You pre-tape and make it fun. They're in the middle of the thing. Since there's no audience here, let's have the audience decide who we should face at WrestleMania. And they have two super New Day fans, one of which, I mean, it's them. It's both of them up on the thing. That's pre-taped. They cut to Miz and Morrison. Miz wearing a New Day t-shirt and a unicorn horn, and Morrison wearing a damned inflatable unicorn costume. This man is so willing to do whatever is best for the gig, for the gimmick, for the bit. He could easily be super serious, badass, like athletic, awesome wrestler. But he's like, no, I have a sense of humor. I don't take myself too seriously. Yes, I will absolutely put on this costume. So yeah, they say we think the New Day should be the should get the title shots. And then they cut over to two people who are supposed to be like Usos fans. And it was, you know, they were doing a lot of hip hop voices, and I'm gonna give them a pass, but it was, tread lightly, fellas. There's a lot of stuff you could do when you were, like, trying to pretend to be Crime Time. You could get away with doing a lot of stuff back then you can't really get away with doing now. So I'm glad you, like, went right up to the line and didn't, like, you know, parkour over it. So they were wearing Uso stuff and did a lot of stuff talking about penitentiaries and whatnot. And then, of course, they cut to two guys wearing their themselves over another part of the stands wearing bacon costumes, and then they were supposed to be heavy machinery. We're so blue collar, but they're doing it in, like, really weird thick southern accents. We're so blue collar. I'm like, well, Otis is from Wisconsin and Tucker is from Oregon. Although, having grown up in Oregon, I can tell you rural Oregon is basically Alabama. So they got the accent right for Tucker. But anyway, no, this was so weird that they started talking to each other, the pairings of three guys. Why are you dressed up like ham? We're not dressed up like ham. We're dressed up like bacon. Why are those hams over there talking? Like, it was actually really fun. This is the kind of stuff, like, not all the comedy landed, but somebody, like, had an idea and just went for it. Like, as opposed to, I'm going to talk to a camera into a microphone. Like, it just didn't. You have so many options to be creative. Like, I don't know, AEW. I mean, they did great stuff with their empty arena match on Wednesday, empty arena show on Wednesday. Very creative. It felt fun. Most of the stuff they've been doing on SmackDown and Raw and the PC doesn't feel fun. It feels forced. It feels like, God damn it, we're going to do the same thing we've always done, and everyone's just going to accept it. And I'm like, I mean, thanks for showing up, guys. And I do appreciate you doing this during this time. But if this is what you're going to do, just go home and be with your families. Like, that's more important than this. Anywho, yeah, so Miz and Morrison, like, I guess actually it was for the SmackDown Championships. I did not realize that. It was for the tag team titles. And they fought Heavy Machinery. And it was fine. It's decent. But, like, Otis's stuff without the crowd, like, popping for it doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, if you don't know that there's hundreds, like, there's thousands of people in arena who totally love all the weird gyrations that this fat dude is doing, if you don't know that's the case and you watch him do it with no reaction, it's like, why is this fat dude moving like that? That doesn't make a lot of sense. So yeah, Dolph Ziggler is on commentary because of course he is. And at one point he interrupts the match when it looks like Otis and Tucker might win. And I don't know how he does this. Maybe he's got like a little remote in his pocket. But he puts Instagram photos of he and Mandy Rose up on the Titantron, such as it is. And Otis looks at them and he becomes enraged. Like, he attacks Ziggler and then Ziggler retreats up to the top of the ramp. So since Ziggler isn't there, Otis attacks Miz and Morrison, just like goes nuts. And then he like runs through them, through the barricade, and then gets a chair. And Tucky tries to stop him from using the chair, but he uses the chair because he's so angry at the pictures of Mandy and Dolph. And it gets him disqualified, and he gets so angry. He starts crying. He starts crying into the shoulder of Tucky. It's all weird. It's a bit much. Also, I don't know if anybody out there is as much of a connoisseur, a aficionado of old Three Stooges shorts, but I grew up on them shits. I used to watch those all the time. When we would go to the video store, I'm dating myself, I'm very old. We would go to the video store with my dad, because he had a buddy who owned a video store, and attached to the video store was like one of those take and bake pizza places. And so we'd go, we'd pick out whatever video we wanted to watch, and then we'd get a take and bake pizza, and it'd be like dad and the boys night. It was fun. But we'd always pick out a videotape of Three Stooges stuff, because me and my little brother loved that crap, which is weird that I grew up to be like, hoity-toity, I don't know if I like this comedy bit. It doesn't quite speak to me. But, yeah, the Three Stooges were really good at doing all that crap. And there was one very, very famous Three Stooges short where Curly becomes a boxer. And he, like, something snaps inside of him if he hears the song Pop Goes the Weasel. Like, his brain snaps and he just starts punching people. And so, as a boxer, they had to play Pop Goes the Weasel for Curly to punch this guy so he could win. And at one point, I believe it's the the radio they had that was playing Pop Goes the Weasel, the phonograph, whatever, it gets broken. So then Larry has to rush to the music store and get a violin and come back in time for him to play Pop Goes the Weasel so that Curly can snap out of it, stop, like actually start fighting back, because he can't fight unless he hears Pop Goes the Weasel. And so basically Otis is Curly. Like he's like he's 1 week away from going like he's basically that's all he is. So yes, his Pop Goes the Weasel is the Gram. I have never been high on this storyline, at least not as much as some people. I don't trust Vince to not think, like, honestly, that Mandy should wind up with Dolph. I think a lot of people who love the storyline believe that somehow Mandy's going to wind up with Otis, and I just don't think that's where it's headed. But we'll see. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, so because Machinery got screwed. They didn't know what to do because, you know, wop wop, nuggeta nuggeta, quack 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 quack. I think that's what, if my memory serves me correctly, that's an accurate impression of Curly from the Three Stooges. So, because of all of that, the Usos are wrestling the New Day next week, and the winner gets a shot at Miz and Morrison for the tag team championships at WrestleMania. And when I say the winner of that match, I honestly 100% mean that Miz and Morrison are going to cause a disqualification or something in that match, because they think that if neither the New Day or the Usos win that match, then they won't have to defend the titles at all. But of course, what happens in that situation is that both the Usos and the New Day get a chance to challenge for the titles at Mania. And then the Miz and Morrison will be like, what? You didn't tell me that? Oh, that's crazy, because they never, ever, 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 ever use that angle, and they certainly won't again this time. Ideally, though, incidentally, the Usos and the New Day and Miz and Morrison is the match you should be doing for Mania. I just wish they weren't being so blatantly obvious about how they're going to get around to it. Roman Reigns and Goldberg had a contract signing. Roman Reigns comes to the ring and he walks out. He doesn't punch the ground, thankfully. And Goldberg doesn't headbutt anybody. And thankfully, for social distancing, he doesn't come out with an entire police escort walking 2 feet next to him. But he has come out through a giant thing of fog. Anyway, he comes all the way down to the ring. And there's a table. And then there's two chairs on one other side. And immediately, each of them, as though it were choreographed and not at all spontaneously, both they pick up the chairs and toss them over the sides. It would have been actually kind of a lot of fun. It'd be like, play with our expectations. If Goldberg came down to the ring and tossed the chair out, and then Roman was like, well, they don't have any place to sit. And then he just sits in the chair. Because that's totally a power move. If somebody else has no place to sit, and you sit down, you are in charge. That's a total power move. Big time executives who don't have a place for the person to sit across from them at their desk are pulling a power move. You could do that. You could be a lot of fun. Like, let us see the, and also Goldberg has no person to blame but himself. Like, he's the one who threw his own chair out of the ring. You could do that. Instead, it was like, walk down, pick up chair, throw chair, look at each other. Like, it, oh God, it was, it's just, it, I mean, it's, anyway. of course, Michael Cole is there, and he has Goldberg. You won the title at Sands of Time. And then you came out and you said, who's next? Who did you think was going to answer the call, answer the challenge? You said, well, I hoped it would be Roman Reigns, but I didn't think he would have the balls. And then Michael Cole turns to Roman Reigns and he says, Roman, you did. And I wanted him to say, Roman, you did have the balls, but he paused just long enough for me to hope he was going to say, you did have the balls, but he actually said, you did answer the challenge. Why? Why? Because it's the title match at WrestleMania. Like, that's a dumb fucking question. What do I say to that? I say you're a terrible reporter, Michael Cole. Come on. That's a terrible fucking question. But he says, it's just so funny. Like the whole thing, like, I didn't even had the balls. You've got no balls. You could fill a warehouse with all the balls you don't have, son. And then for Roman to like, what do I see? I see a little bitch. Like, I don't know. Are you legally allowed to call someone a bitch if you have no balls? I don't know. I'm fuzzy on the whole bitch balls legal precedent. Anyway, then they flip the table, and then they get really, really close to each other, like nose to nose. And I guess this match needed a title on the line. God damn. I mean, when I think about how much more interesting it would be to me and why, whether I would actually like, are they Cena versus The Fiend for the title means that if Cena wins, LOL, then Cena becomes the 17-time champion, LOL. And that's a completely different kind of thing. You know, like it would be, that'd be huge. It would mean there would be some kind of doubt as to whether or not Cena would win. Goldberg versus Reigns doesn't need a title. Like, just so you can put the title on Reigns, whoop-de-doo. Anyway, so at least they set up some stuff that's supposed to happen on the Smacky Downs. But let's talk briefly about how they are going to tape Mania. This is a very good decision. Apparently, they are not only going to tape Mania, they are also, according to a report in PW Insider, I believe, they are going to tape SmackDown. Yeah. And they were going to tape some stuff for NXT as well. Yeah. Two episodes of SmackDown are supposed to be taped today, Saturday. NXT stuff taped tomorrow. The next two Raws on Monday and Tuesday, and both nights of WrestleMania on Wednesday and Thursday. So that's like everything done by the 26th. And then everyone goes away. Everyone goes away. Go home, shelter in place. Whatever. This is so much smarter because you can tape things. If Goldberg can't get Roman up for the jackhammer, you can at least, maybe you could tape it again if Roman can help Goldberg get him up for the jackhammer a second time. Or instead of taping it again, you could use a different camera angle to make it look better. You could say, you know what, we're not going to do that spot. We're going to do a different spot. And everyone's like, oh, but all the results are going to be leaked and we're going to know what's going to happen at WrestleMania ahead of time. Well, I have a thing there. You could, A, if that happens, not fucking read the dirt sheets that are going to give you the results of Mania. Or B, I would say for those dirt sheets, don't publish them. You know, just don't. And for the 7 people who are going to be in the PC for every match that's actually being taped, you know, it's easy for them to trace it back to who might have leaked it. So don't leak it. And I would say they should tape 2 finishes for every match. Because between March 26th and April 5th and 6th, April 4th and 5th, whatever. Who knows what happens if somebody you thought you were going to put a title on gets really sick, maybe you go to the other ending, and we never know. And the fact that you filmed 2 endings, then it'll be a lot harder for anybody to leak who wins, because we won't know which they're actually going to show on the TV until it's been done. It's much harder to leak things. Like the reason why when they used to like pre-tape NXT like a month in advance and then show them on Wednesdays back in the day. And that would leak because there'd be a whole lot of fucking fans in attendance. And some whose whole thing was like telling you on Twitter what happened in the match. Yeah, that's not going to happen this time. I mean, I would hope the people in attendance aren't going to blab what happens at Mania. But this is a much better idea, because we honestly don't know what kind of travel restrictions are going to be like as we get in the next couple of weeks. Honestly, with how many stupid friggin' spring breakers were out all over the beaches all over Florida, it does feel like Florida is going to be one of the hardest hit states in the next couple of weeks. So there might be like a shelter in place, you don't get to leave your house type of a deal. Nobody in or out of the state kind of a thing by the time Mania rolls around. It's a good idea to get everything taped and in the can ahead of time. And for some of the fun matches, you could actually record them a little bit more cinematically, you know, like put a camera like up in the rafters that shoots down. You could edit the whole thing together to be like really cool. We know they have an amazing video production team. Put them to work, edit the whole thing together so it looks really good. You never have to have, you know, Kevin Dunn doing cut, 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 cutity, cut, cut, zoom, 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 zoom. You could use that technique, but don't. I'm looking forward to Mania because it could be something really special. They could put this whole thing together with all of their great production power and make it something really great. And taping it all ahead of time is smart for a lot of reasons. But let people go home and be with their families for a few weeks after you tape all this stuff. That is a smart thing to do. So, yeah. And I hope everybody who's under quarantine, anybody out there who has family who's already been affected by this, it is scary. Personally, we are trying very hard to get my in-laws, my wife's parents, to take this seriously. They do not at all. My mother-in-law's new line is, well, we survived polio, we'll survive this. I'm like, well, you were friggin' 4 through polio, so don't tell me like it was like you captained a battleship in World War II or something. Also, yeah, you were lucky. You survived polio. A lot of other kids didn't. So just stay home. Like, we've offered to, like, get their groceries delivered to them. And they're like, no, I want to go pick out my own fruits and vegetables. Okay, great. You know, this is difficult for everybody. My brother's wife is severely immunocompromised. So she's deathly afraid of getting it, and with good reason. Everybody just be smart about this. I love the Fightful Faithful. I have, since I'm a day one Fightfuler, the people who've been around, who've been the real Fightful Faithful since day one, they know I was here since the beginning. I'm going to be here as long as they'll have me. The Fightful Faithful are a branch of my family. I love all you guys. If you need to talk to anybody about anything surrounding this or anything else, drop me a line on Twitter at Alex Sour Graps. I'm fairly approachable on there. So let's all be smart together, and we're all going to get through this. I mean, I always say this at the end of every episode, but particularly during a pandemic, when a lot of people just can't seem to figure out how to follow directions to keep the rest of the species alive, it is particularly true right now that everything sucks.